Metallica, here they come, the kings of metal!
What?
We do what we want to do, you know. If they consider that selling out, then whatever. You know, we're not trying to be something big and fancy, you know. It's just us doing what we do. Let's keep it that way.
Welcome to Metal Up Your Podcast. I'm Ethan Luck.
And I'm Clint Wells.
And here we are, finally, episode number 100.
Hey, congrats.
Congrats to you.
It's been a long journey. It's been good. I've learned a lot about myself. I've learned a lot about the band Metallica.
I've learned a lot about my body.
Yeah?
Yeah. Experiencing new things I haven't ever dealt with before.
That's great. Here at 40, you're finally
Hit 40,
exploring
so
your body.
Yeah, things are falling off.
Well, this is a special episode. Of course, we got to talk to the great Ray Burton, which
is such an
honor. It was surreal in many ways.
Very.
And then in a lot of ways, as you guys are going to find out when you listen, he was just so easy to talk to. You know, he made us feel really comfortable. He was really forthcoming with stories about Cliff's life, about his life.
Yeah.
An interesting dude, a smart dude.
It made me really wish we were just in the same room with him.
Yeah, it was great. And we're really excited to share this episode with everyone. We've had it on the Patreon for, I guess, a little over a month.
Yeah, something like that.
So we want to thank Aaron Ginther, who's a friend of the show, for getting us hooked up with Casey.
Yeah, Ray's daughter.
And, you know, I was texting her before and just really wanting her to know that our intentions were to be professional. Grateful, courteous, and I was kind of worried about like coming off like a Gurmy podcast nerd.
Yeah, we don't want it to seem at all like we were like just barging in. Just
exactly.
Gonna, like, you know, remember when you were in the Beatles kind of questions.
And she was so chill and cool about the whole deal.
Yeah.
Just very casual. And, you know, I do think, you know, having Aaron vouch for us was probably a big part of that. You know?
Yeah. Again, Aaron, thank you so much for that. And for those who don't remember, Aaron, we met at the Detroit show last year. His daughter's Kendalyn.
And then Kendalyn got on the Jumbotron wearing the Metal Up Your Podcast patch.
Yeah.
And they're also big fans of your new record, which is really fun.
Yeah, they got a vinyl. And actually, Sarah Sobeck got a picture from them of Kendalyn holding my vinyl and sent it to me. It's really sweet, yeah.
It's cool to be, you know, speaking of 100 episodes and, like, you know, where we've come all this way from, it's so cool to be sort of enmeshed in this Metallica community now.
And
we even have our own community of the podcast and...
Yeah, it's a trip. It's something that, you know, you kind of envision when you start something like this. Like, maybe one day this will happen, or maybe one day we'll have 200 fans, you know.
Right.
And here we are, you know, pushing 2 years, episode 100, and it's like, it's exceeded our expectations.
Oh, I mean, for me, big
like,
time.
Beyond, I mean.
Absolutely.
And, you know, when we first sat down to you know, when I kind of approached Clint, like, hey, you want to do this thing? And we sat down to come up with episode ideas and stuff. We had a super long list of episodes, and... I mean, we haven't even gotten to most of those because we are always coming up with new ideas, you know, and then all of a sudden the EP thing happened. And
next year is going to be probably the busiest year for us.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to go well into a fourth year. So, you know, it'll be fun to see.
Yeah.
We wanted to keep this episode short and special and get to the Ray episode. We're not going to do any housekeeping. We're not going to read any emails.
Yep.
We'll just say right here before we get to Ray, if you think the show has value... you can go to patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast, get involved over there. We do all sorts of things over there. We're giving out the Justice Box set, and we're going to be doing more giveaways like that soon. We've got the Cover Our World Black EP Volume 2 that's about to drop soon.
It's coming out soon.
And as of today, even if you're not on Patreon, you can get Volume 1 of Cover Our World Blackened wherever you buy music. iTunes, Amazon.
iTunes, Amazon, Spotify, Apple Music, any streaming service, anywhere you buy digital music, you'll be able to find it.
Of course, with the streaming stuff, it's free or whatever your subscription fee is. If you want to buy it from iTunes or Amazon, it's $6. And all of that goes into support Metal Up Your Podcast.
Right, yeah.
I guess without any further ado, let's get into the interview with Ray Burton.
Yeah, here you go.
All right.
Hello.
Hey, Casey, this is Clint. How you doing?
Hi, Clint. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm a little early. I apologize. I'm about 2 minutes early.
Hey, it's quite all right. I'm upstairs. I'm going to go downstairs and Ray's sitting there waiting for you. So,
and this is Clint, right?
Yes, sir. Nice to talk to you, Ray. Clint and Ethan.
And Nathan. Okay. Yes, how's the weather? You're in Nashville, Tennessee?
We're in Tennessee, and it's starting to cool off a little bit, but it's been pretty hot this summer.
Pretty hot and muggy out here. We got that southern heat.
Yeah, well, I was born in Murfreesboro.
Really?
Did not know that.
Just down the road, 32 miles down the road from Nashville.
Yeah.
Wow.
MTSU is a big school over there.
500 North Spring Street.
Wow.
The house is now kind of a state historical monument, I think, something like that.
Well, I'd imagine so.
So even though you've been in California for a while, you're still just a Tennessee redneck like me. Like me
oh,
and
yeah.
Nathan.
Yeah, I root for the Tennessee Volunteers.
Nice.
Get the crap beat out of them all the time. But when I was a kid, they were pretty nationwide. They were pretty damn good teams that came out of it. Of course, my mom was strictly a Vanderbilt fan.
Okay.
She loved it. They were mainly born around Lebanon and Smyrna area.
Yep. I actually live in Donelson, which is kind of a burb of Nashville, we're really close to Lebanon and Smyrna.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, my family, but I left there when I was only 13 months old.
Okay.
So I came here to California, and I pretty much when I was in grammar school and junior high school, I was always envious of the kids that were native sons.
Hmm.
And then through the years, the thing came out with from the religious people in the country that your birth date is when you were conceived. Mm. Well, I was conceived in California, but I was born in Tennessee, so I killed two birds with one stone.
There you go. dual citizenship.
That's right, yeah.
Well, I'm a native Californian and ended up in Tennessee.
You guys have just traded.
Whereabouts in California?
I grew up in Long Beach, California, just south of you.
Oh, Long Beach, yeah, just around the peninsula.
Yep, yeah, I grew up just off of the Studebaker exit off of the 405.
Oh, yeah, yes. Yeah, I live in the Palos Verdes Peninsula.
Oh, nice.
And so, we have a nice view over the Los Angeles Basin, Southern Cal, although I spent 38 years in the Bay Area, Southern California is quite acceptable to me because I have such great memories of, I was born in 1925, and so I have great memories of seeing the big bands when I was growing up in high school. And so it's always... I have to call it pretty much home.
What part of California did you grow up in?
San Bernardino.
Okay.
And I went to Colton High School, which is just right next door.
Yeah.
For a while, I lived about 300 feet from the famous San Andreas Fault Line. And so I felt many earthquakes, and they never bothered me. It, thank goodness. But anyway, so what are you guys doing anyway? Are you podcast? Is that the situation?
Yep. So Ethan and I are both professional touring musicians and songwriters here in Nashville, and we're huge fans of Metallica, and you know they're one of the bands that inspired us to do what we now do for a living, and. We had the idea to start the show a few years ago. You'd be surprised. A few years ago, not that many podcasts existed for Metallica. Now there are a whole bunch.
Oh, and, yeah?
So just through talking about the band and their music and the power of the music and connecting with the Metallica family, the show's really grown and taken on its own life. And we've been able to talk to a lot of people connected to the camp. And that leads us here today talking to you, which is such an honor, by the
way. Yeah, very much so.
Thank you so much for taking the time.
My pleasure.
You've become kind of like a big fixture, a big part of the fan community, and carrying the spirit of Cliff with you and staying so positive and all this? Like, how does it feel all these years later to still have that ranking in the culture of the band?
It totally, totally amazes me. From 30 some odd years since Cliff died, I think it is. And one of my stepdaughter's high school friends put something on the internet that they discovered. And here was a thing on the internet where they were playing in Chicago in 1983. And it had to be early because Cliff is playing his Rickenbacker.
Right, the Metro show.
Yeah, bass. And it is a good job. They had it remastered, I guess, onto HD. And it is really a good show. And it went on for, I think, 45 minutes or an hour, something like that.
Hmm.
And we were so pleased because here was old Cliff up there shaking his long hair.
Yeah.
And Kirk had evidently just joined the band. And anyway, it's a great addition that nobody had seen, at least we hadn't seen it all of these years. And here, 30 some odd years later, it shows up.
It is pretty amazing through the internet how things that are so old and maybe people think they're long and forgotten and don't exist anymore, all of a sudden will resurface online. You know, somebody has an old VHS recording of something, of a show, in this case, the Metro show. And, just out of nowhere, it shows up online and everyone gets to see it. And, you know, even though the band has been around for so long, it's something fresh and new because you've never seen it before. That had to have been exciting for you to see, your son on stage for footage you've never seen.
Well, the thing that amazes me is that the technology allows for the, I'm sure, the original, I don't know what kind of camera they used, but was like most of them I've seen, they were kind of grainy, whereas the CD, technology nowadays allows them to come in and just make a smooth movie of what went on. And I'm just absolutely amazed, and I just love the technology advancements that have come along since I was a little kid.
Yeah.
And it's just, the first radio that I can recall was in 1928 or 29, something like that. And, they were vacuum tube things. And
right.
Golly, nowadays you get, size of a little Fitbit, and you get so much information on the thing.
Yeah.
And it's just wonderful, I think. I don't know much about it. I barely use it. I have a computer, but I did. Using the thing is still Greek to me.
You're not missing too much. Most days I want to throw mine out the window.
Oh, I see my daughter and granddaughters and their frustration with it at times of the internet and that, and it's maddening, and yet I think the overall it's just unbelievable.
Absolutely. I mean, and especially in an age where, for example, like guitar, something like Guitar Hero, as silly as that seemed when it came out, turning people on, whole new generations on to the music that your son made, and young people getting connected with what Metallica's about, and that's all the good of it too, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you mind if we talk a little bit about when Cliff was a boy?
Oh, Cliff, well, as I've told people, Cliff was, as a parent, you just couldn't ask for a better child of in behavior, in you know, I can't remember Cliff crying at any time. And he, as a little kid, he had foot problems. In growing, it was his feet were growing into severe pigeon-toed things, and so Jan and I had to put these stirrups, put him in stirrups every night, and he never cried. And the damn stirrups, they spread his legs and actually twist his ankles outwardly, so that they would make his, when he stepped, he would his step would, the foot would be straight. And I knew it was painful. You could just, you know, you didn't, you can imagine it, but that little guy, and he was, around 2 years old, maybe a little younger, and, never cried. He would let Jan and I put the stirrups on him every night, and he would get this silly damn grin on his, not a grin, but a look on his face like, okay, let's get the goddamn thing over you guys. No, but as a child, he was, he just behaved well. The only thing he did wrong, that he had a notorious habit of, when he was in a high chair, of spilling the milk. We have a little glass of milk for him to go along with the meal. And that cotton picking guy was always knocking the milk over. And I look back on it, and it was you know, I laugh at it, but at the time it just, oh Christ, we gotta mop up this milk again. And he always looked at and look at Jan and me like, what's the big deal, Mom and Dad? It's just spilled milk.
It sounds like if that's the worst thing that he did, then I think you raised a good son.
Well, that's about, really, that's about, he was, you know, he never did things to get into trouble. He'd, when it came to school, he was really, really smart. And he didn't have to study much, just to put it in the way that education came easy to him.
Right.
He was smart to the point that it just, you didn't have to tell him much for him to get the message on how to do things. And it was, as I say, he just couldn't, parents couldn't ask for a better child. And he also would, as he got older and into his teens, he never did things to get us in, where his mother and I would have to reprimand him for something. I can't ever remember anything like that where he needed a reprimand.
Wow.
One of our listeners, James Haas, asked just about this time in Cliff's life. He says, how was Cliff introduced to music as a child, and what types of music did he enjoy growing up? What was that like for him growing up in the house? Were you and Jan big music fans? And
well, Jan just loved opera, and so we played that quite a bit. And then I grew up during the big band era, and I liked the big band music. And in fact, there was one time I said to him, "Now this is when he." Was probably 20, 21, maybe a little older, 22. I said, hey, Cliff, you ever heard of Charlie Christian? And he said, oh, I don't think so. And I said, listen to this tune by the Benny Goodman Orchestra. And Charlie Christian is featured on the guitar. And the tune is called Soul Flight. And it the whole song, Charlie Christian, is featured. And it was all over with. Cliff says, boy, that guy, he was good. And Charlie Christian was, but it kind of like Cliff, he died at a young age. I think he was only about 27 or 28. Hmm. But Cliff and his music-wise and how he, nobody in my family or Jan's family ever took up music, but Cliff, there's an old Barney Miller, they called it Barney Miller Show. I think that was it. And it was a comedy thing about a goofball police station in New York City. And it started out with a bass guitar solo. And when Cliff came to his mother and me and asked if he could learn to play the bass, he said, well, we asked him, well, you know, where did you get this from? And he says, I just like the Barney Miller theme song.
Wow.
And so that's where it all got started. And we never, Jan and I never had to prod Cliff into his lessons or practicing. He did it all on his own. He would come to us and, will you get me a guitar? Yeah, and an amplifier. And so we got him an El Cheapo thing. And then when it came to practicing and in instructions, he went through two music instructors. I think it lasted about 3 months with each of them. And then he found this guy, Steve, there in Castro Valley. And Steve introduced him to the classical guitar, and boy, it just went up from there.
Wow.
And this little video I was telling you about really shows Cliff applying that to that classical music to the bass guitar.
I think one of the most impressive things about Cliff's legacy is how eclectic and diverse his music interests were. And mm-hmm. I think one of the really special, we think all the time, we think about all the bands that came up with Metallica, what are all the ingredients that make them such a special band alongside all those other bands? And I think it has a lot to do with that kind of stuff that Cliff brought to the table in terms of composition. And he sort of elevated their music beyond just Bay Area thrash, is my takeaway from especially Ride the Lightning and Puppets.
Yeah. Well, that... from the very first time I saw him perform with Metallica, I had seen rock and roll bands before then. And the Metallica guys, when Cliff joined them and I saw them perform there in San Francisco, they were tighter than others. Most of the other bands, played so well together, and they were just a notch above, and maybe me even more than a notch, but they were above all the other little bands that would join them on the venue, and they just continue to be that way.
Did you ever see Cliff perform with Trauma?
Oh yeah, yeah, just I've got several times. And
were you a fan of what they were doing?
Yes. Oh yeah. They were kind of the normal rock and roll band. Whereas Cliff wants like the thing of the heavy metal, like, he liked Black Sabbath, really liked them. And Thin Lizzy, like them, but Black Sabbath, he liked the wildness of that they're playing.
Yeah, I think we all owe a debt of gratitude to Black Sabbath for inspiring so many people like Cliff. One of our listeners, Brad Blazik, had an interesting question about when James and Lars, I guess they saw Cliff playing at the Whiskey when Trauma was playing down in L.A., and he asked, so the boys famously asked Cliff to join the band. he, in one of the most badass moves in all of rock history, said, "I'll join your band if you move to where I live." And they did. Yeah. Our friend Brad asks, he says, what was Cliff's first reaction to joining the band? Was he confident that they were going to make it? Which I thought was an interesting question.
No, he expressed to his mother and me that, "Mom and Dad, can you support me? I'm going to go out and make the guitar playing my vocation. And will you support me for 5 years? And then if I can't make it in that time, I feel that I'm good enough that I can become a studio musician." And so in the early stages now, he had been playing, I think at that time, probably 4 or 5 years, something like that. And I think it was about the same time he joined Metallica. But it showed that he was not arrogant, but was confident of how good he was. And yet he never puffed up about it or anything. He just liked to play and loved to jam. And so I think all of the all the music that he played was just kind of a jam to him. But at the same time, he was wanting and did play some serious music.
Mm.
And the fact that he, when it came to practicing, that really showed that how serious he was about this occupation that he had decided on.
I've read that he, and this may have been exaggerated, you can obviously let us know if it's true or not, but I've read that he would practice for 6 hours a day.
Oh yeah, four to five, six. It might have been six at times, but gee, I'd come home from work and he would be in his room practicing, you know. Jan had not prodded him to do any of that. It just and everything, every kind of decision he was going to make, he would come and talk it over with his mother and me, and he had already pretty much decided that he wanted like going with the Metallica. He felt that it was a move he had to make, and he was not at the beginning with Johnny Z mm-hmm. as the manager. He was not particularly happy about he as a manager, but when he got Cliff Bernstein and Peter Minch as their managers, he came home and he was absolutely elated that he says, "We finally got two managers that know the business," and it really paid off. Really,
yeah.
Showed.
Wow, those guys are really sharp.
Oh yeah, yeah, and and they are such nice guys. Golly,
right?
And Cliff Bernstein. He looked like some homeless guy.
Right.
But anyway.
He can afford to.
Yeah.
First Metallica show that you saw after Cliff joined?
Yeah, they performed at the, I can't remember the venue, but it was in San Francisco. And it's on some of the things they played is, I can't remember, Cliff 'Em All, I think it was.
Okay.
The documentary they made, I think there's some of the, and it shows some of the interviews, but that was the first one we saw. And he'd talked on the phone to Lars, and this is after Trauma. They discovered Cliff. James and Lars discovered Cliff down at the Whiskey A Go Go
mm-hmm.
in Hollywood. And Cliff came home one afternoon, or maybe it was on the weekend, but Anyway, I said, who are these guys? Cliff's always on the phone. Well, they either James or Lars were trying to get him to join.
Mm-hmm.
And so we said, well, you know, why not? He said, well, they want me to come down to L.A. And I said, I'm not going down there. I like the Bay Area too much.
I love that story.
And so, yeah, oh, it is. He just matter of fact, I remember he was in his room and we were talking to him and he just kind of laid back. He says, no, I'm not going to go down there. They want me and they can come up here. And so sure.
it seems typical of what you can see in Cliff and how much the other guys looked up to him. You know, he was almost like an older brother to them.
Yeah.
And in some ways, even the leader of the band almost, you know?
Yeah. Well, he was the oldest of the four kids.
Right.
He was, just by a few months. But Cliff was the oldest.
And is it true that he mostly stayed at home throughout a lot of their success because they were touring so much? So he never got his own place. He just would crash with you guys.
No, he was still at home with his mom and dad. No, it. He was. You know, he never said it, but you knew that Cliff really liked his mom and his dad.
Hmm. Yeah.
He just he never said I love you, but he just you could tell it just the way he treated us. He didn't. I honestly cannot remember ever having an argument with Cliff about things that, you know, whether it was religion or politics or the things that families argue about, that it was always really and truly a discussion. He never got heated about it. And that's, you know, as a little kid he didn't, if he got tired of playing with the little kids, he would come on home and muse himself in the room. And,
yeah.
he was just, as I say, he was a son that you just, a parent could not wish for. Really, it's we had no idea that it was going to turn out that way. In grammar school, that he was middle, you know, IQ wise, Cliff was pretty high up there. He had such a grasp of people and things, and just like I subscribed to a magazine called the Progressive. And it would come every month, and I would look forward to getting it because it has such interesting social and political columns and mm-hmm. and stories. And I remember coming home and I said, "Hey, this is about 2 days later than it should arrive." I said, "Hey, Jan, have you seen?" Seen the Progressive magazine, and Cliff was in earshot, and he says, "Oh, I have it here, Dad. I'm reading it." he was a grown up kid, and knew manners and a great sense of humor. Hmm. He loved humor. He thought Monty Python and the Flying Circus was absolutely the greatest comedy stuff. Back to the point where he would, in his conversation, he would quite often go into their British accent. Cockney, whatever kind it was.
I've always admired that he was a big reader and he had a good grasp of like film culture. He was obviously really eclectic with music. He liked the Misfits and, you know, Maiden and Lynyrd Skynyrd. And I love that he was in probably the most important thrash metal band of the time. And he wore bell bottoms and denim jackets.
Yeah.
He really stood out, you know, as his own kind of voice.
Yeah. Well, that wearing a jacket, the Levi jacket, in the video that I was telling you about that we just discovered that was sent to us. But the others, James and Kirk and Lars are all in, you know, cut off shirts, and their t-shirts were cut. And here's Cliff playing, and this had to be in the, they were sweating like all get out. And here was Cliff playing in a damn Levi jacket. And I asked him one time at where they had performed in Oakland, the Coliseum, and this, it was an August day, hotter than hell. And all these guys were playing with just, you know, their t-shirts. And Cliff was there in his Levi jacket. And I said, after he got home, after the show, I said, how come you're wearing your jacket? It was so damn hot. And he said, well, the damn, I perspire in it, and it, my sweat gets on the guitar, and it affects the playing. And so, well, that's a good reason. So, so anyway, it
was as the band started to gain traction, and even when they signed to Elektra with Ilago, and he's coming home in between tours, was he pretty excited about what was happening with Metallica?
Oh yeah.
Was he aware that it was kind of starting to take off?
Yeah. When they, I can remember the first time that he received, I think it's about $1,500, one of the checks, and he was quite elated about that. Hmm. But he was still very, he wasn't, he had no idea that they were going to be as big as they turned out. He just. Well, as he said to his mother and me, if I make it, fine. If I don't, I will do something else other than Metallica. And so they were on the road, and he had an inkling of it, I know. Mm. And it just Cliff was. Quite level-headed, I guess, is another way to put it. Just there are a few kids that you know have that confidence at a young age, and he just he was humble about his ability, and so it it just worked out. Well for him, and as I said before, it's all of these years, and he's still extremely popular. My goodness,
absolutely.
Oh yeah, and I think that I assume you would agree with Clint and I that I think Metallica, even to this day, have done such an amazing job of keeping Cliff's legacy alive. In addition to what you've done, and. Yeah, I mean, we saw a couple shows on this current tour, and you know, Rob will be up there playing Cliff's bass solo flawlessly, and with a you know video of Cliff in the back, and they've always included him like you know like he's still in the band. You know?
Oh, no question. But what amazes me is that he when Rob plays that solo. And they have a Cliff's playing the same thing, but without sound. Mm. And on the screen, the kids in the audience are just clapping and yelling and just enjoying the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Just that just when I'm in the crowd watching it. It just makes me feel so appreciative that Cliff's success is still so prevalent.
It's still there for sure, man. Even when we saw that the first show of this tour, you know,
it was chills.
We got chills, you know, and it was it's obvious that he's still a part of the band. He's always with them, and yeah, it's yeah, his spirit that will always live on in that band.
I was particularly touched by James's new guitar, Carl. I'm sure you've seen that, Ray. One of James's new guitars, and it's made from the wood from the garage that they wrote.
Oh, I heard about that. No, I haven't seen it.
Oh, well, so the fretboard, so it's the guy Ken Lawrence who makes those like really pretty, they look like the Explorer guitars that James always played, but they're more like natural wood color. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that guitar, but mm-hmm. the inlay of the frets tells this whole story. And the reason it's called Carl's because it's made from the Carlson Avenue garage, but they have this whole thing with Cliff and they have Orion's belt, or they have Orion on the 12th fret.
Yeah, it's really cool, Ray.
It's really beautiful.
Maybe we could there's a video of James talking about it. Maybe we can send it to Casey.
I'll send
to
one
Casey.
To Casey. Yeah,
yeah, send it to Casey. You bet. Yeah, I'd like to see that.
Yeah, you'll love it.
Oh,
Ray.
You're gonna love it, Ray. It's got this huge thing with Cliff in it. One of the things that I always found touching, Ethan and I are both big fans of Jason Newsted. I think he was such a special dude to come in and fill Cliff's shoes. Man. But one of the stories that Jason tells a lot is how you and Jan were some of the first people to come welcome him into the band, give him a hug, basically give him your blessing. I've always found that to be a really touching part of the story. It had to have been very emotional for you guys and complicated for everyone. And the sweetness of that is inspiring.
Yeah, I can remember it like it was yesterday of seeing him when they had decided and Jason is just a wonderful kid. God dang, just when I say kid, he's not a kid anymore.
Right.
He's middle aged, and but he's just wonderful. And he did a good job. It it was kind of tough. For him taking the place of Cliff because of, I think, James and the others and Lars and Kirk. Cliff was just, I think they kind of felt, I don't know, I've never really spoken to them about it, but they kind of felt that nobody could replace Cliff. And and there was a degree of, not resentment exactly, but something like Cliff, that you're not Cliff, there's a little bit that I observed that it seemed to be the case, but I thought that Jason did a great job. I remember one time I was down in the pit, and
as you do,
Jason, she came out on the underneath the stage, and he came out from the back of the stage, just right beside me, and he was doing a rock and roll thing on the bass, and boy, oh boy, and that kid can really play that guitar well, and. I don't know how it exactly. I don't know what song it was, but Jason did a good job, I thought.
I was really glad to see that you were at the 30th anniversary shows where both Jason and Robert played.
Oh, that was great. I just and the amazing thing is that to me is that it started. I think at 8 o'clock. And when they finally closed it down, it was approaching 3 o'clock in the morning. And this was at the Fillmore there in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Just amazing. I like, good God, that just showed it was a good show, and everybody had a wonderful time. But the idea of them having that going over either 4 or 5 days, and every night the place was packed.
And it was one of the first times they ever played "To Live Is to Die" in its entirety, which of course is the tribute to Cliff on the Justice record. What was it like backstage at those shows? I mean, there were just how many of those special guests, like Dan Ziggs back there, and
Mustaine's back there.
The Merciful Fate guys are there, and Dave Mustaine. Was that a trip back there?
Yeah, well, I didn't. That show, I sat up in the balcony the whole show.
Okay, right.
And so I just, when they came out, the different bands, and of course, I just saw them the first night. Mm-hmm. The other three, I didn't go with. Kind of begged off. Let me tell you a little story about that.
Okay.
Cliff and the Metallica played a gig at the Kabuki Theater in San Francisco, and it was their last gig for the that particular tour that they were on. And Bill Graham, who was a promoter, big promoter there in San Francisco, he says, look at you guys, the Kabuki is open Friday night. You want to play a second night? And they said, oh, sure. And so they sold out that second night. And so that was a Friday. And then so Cliff came home either Saturday or Sunday afternoon. And so the first night, Jan and Cliff's grandmother, Marion, and I went. And then the next night, Friday, I didn't go. And so when Cliff got home on Sunday, I apologized to him for not going for the second show. Jan went with two other ladies that were with kids that went to school with Cliff. And so anyway, I apologized to it. And he put his hand on my shoulder and says, that's all right, Dad. I know the kind of music you like. So this is the kind of kid he was. His mom and dad didn't have to be in the audience. If they were, fine and dandy. If they weren't, that was okay with him.
Yeah.
Speaking of you going to those shows, did you ever see any of the Spastic Children shows?
No, I don't. It doesn't ring a bell.
It's the kind of the side project, and he was in with James, where James played drums.
Oh, that. Oh, yeah. Up at the
at Ruthie's.
Yeah.
Ruthie's Inn.
Oh, yeah. Ruthie's. No, I never did see any of those. But Cliff would come home and tell about and how much he enjoyed it, and he would tell little stories about Fred Cotton, the singer.
Right.
For the Spastic Children.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, oh, yeah, what kind of song? He says he writes a lot of the songs. And I said, oh, yeah, like what? He said, well, one of them is I Like Farts. So Cliff really enjoyed that. And he enjoyed going out to and jamming at Barn there in Castro Valley. One of his high school friends, granddad, had some property that was away from town up this canyon in the East Bay.
Yeah.
And he just loved to go out there. And they, there were no houses around, and just this barn, and it had electricity, and they plug their instruments in and just thrash away. And he just loved that kind of thing. Just like he liked to go up to Maxwell, as they call it.
The Maxwell House.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And he just loved to get away from the madness of performing.
Yeah. James has talked about how that was a bond for them, because they could both go frog hunting together, kind of be the outdoorsmen types that they were, at least more so than Lars and Kirk.
Yeah.
And a place to get away from being local rock stars, too, because at a certain point, even if it was just in the Bay Area, he was pretty well known, right?
Oh, he was getting to be, yeah. No question. Yeah. And he was the little that I was out with him, like for dinner or something like that, he was very receptive if anybody came up and wanted to meet him or shake his hand or something. He was always just quite cordial, and He just didn't like the idea of being a rock star. He hated it with a fashion, a passion.
What was it like for you as his dad to see that? It's mixtures of pride and awe, and it must have been a trip to see your son become a famous person like that.
Yeah, well, it never ceases to amaze me that I go to these the venues and I just can't get over it. Like the last few times I would get out go through the row when I'm going to that. I usually, the shows that I see now, I usually sit in the sound booth with Big Nick.
Yeah.
And so I have to kind of go through the crowd to get there. And my gosh, the kids Ray.
Yeah, they all know you.
Yeah. And I thought, well, okay, Cliffy. I'm just on your, coattails.
Oh, right.
Type of thing. You're the guy that is really popular. It's, and I enjoy it. It's, and I just like, I'm curious about it. And I, so often I don't have the time to really ask. I ask them where they're from and what their name is and if they're from California or some place that I'm vaguely familiar with. It's interesting to chat with them, and they're great. My God, great fans.
Oh yeah,
absolutely.
Just and they just think of the, and what amazes me is James is singing a song in there. Right along with him on the words, and I have difficulty understanding the words. Yes, I think age has something to do with that.
Maybe
you gotta really enunciate for me. So.
What was it like? What was the experience like doing the acceptance speech for Cliff for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction?
Well, that's kind of a cute little story, I would say. That I can't remember which girl it was, something to do with the programming of that, and she said, "Now, how long a speech are you going to make, or something like that?" And I said, "I just wing it, I didn't write anything down. I just." Spoke off the top of my head. That's the reason it was so short. And
I thought the comment about Jan was really sweet.
Yeah, well, she was, as I said, I've said before that Metallica's biggest fan was Jan. She just adored the kids and always. Back them, and she was particularly Jason coming in. She just, she got along with all of them. That and they are, I think, great kids. They, Cliff made a good choice in going with those guys, and I think Lars and James made a great choice in asking Cliff to join them.
We agree.
It really says a lot about Cliff that I love the story is that they heard him playing Anesthesia and they thought it was a lead guitar player. They just went in to see who it was, and it turns out it was Cliff playing bass with the wah and with the envelope filter and stuff. And he's got a legacy to a point where it was this year that they the Alameda County issued the proclamation of the Cliff Burton Day for February 10th.
Yeah, isn't that something?
That's great.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I can't think of too many musicians that we lost that young that hold that kind of spirit and influence over a fan base. It's really remarkable.
Yeah, there's not many artists you can think of on one hand that their impact has been so great in this band that it still lives on today as if they're still there with us.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, well, particularly and going along with that is that only three records he only made three recordings with them.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
And I just think that Cliff had a lot more ideas that were just were not able to be developed and used and so forth. And,
yeah.
Speaking of that, one of the most common questions, and I'm sure you've been asked before or it's come up before, a big point of contention is as the band evolved and went on into the Black Album and maybe some of the more commercial Load and Reload stuff, there's this kind of trope idea that Cliff would have disapproved. And then on the other hand, it seems like he might have been more open to it than people think. What do you think about the direction Metallica went and whether or not Cliff would have been on board with some of those decisions?
Yeah, well, no, I think that is one thing that I think Cliff would have kind of put his foot down and said, no, I want to play what, you know, the kind of music that got us here. Hmm. And he just, I don't think he would have gone along with that. It, he would kind of looked at it as being a little too commercial.
Okay.
And he liked, you know, the freewheeling of heavy metal.
Yeah.
And he just, that was his whole thing. And yet at the same time, he liked to listen to other musicians or bands that were kind of, for a better word, schmaltzy, the rock and roll standard type. I think he would have wanted to go or keep doing what they were doing.
I will say I can't imagine him cutting his hair.
Yeah.
And smoking a cigar with a Tony Montana suit on.
Yeah. Well, it is very likely he liked certain things, and he liked the long hair and the loon pants, the bottoms, and he just
he almost has his own outfit. Like, you could wear bell bottoms and a jean jacket, long hair, and a Misfits t-shirt, and people would assume you were dressed as Cliff Burton.
Right.
It's that iconic.
Yeah.
So, Ray, we know your time is sensitive, and we want to be careful with that. We have a few questions that our listeners were so excited to hear that we were going to be talking to you. And we've got some questions about Cliff, but we got some questions just about you, too, if you're willing to go down that path with us.
Okay.
So, Gene Froman asks, what do you look forward to most on a Metallica tour? Is it the fans, reconnecting with the band, the music? Because it's a big deal when you go. People see you at a show. And
Yeah, it's there's so much about the when I go to the venues, the band, of course, are extremely, to me, extremely entertaining. And as Cliff said, explained as I did a little bit ago, about it being not my kind of music kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yet you get there at the show, and I've told them this, that they are so enjoyable. They just, there's something that band and James fronting the band have that is brings a smile to my face and an enjoyment of just being in the crowd. And of course, the crowd is a show in itself. And right. So that's one of the things I like to see is all of these different shapes and sizes of people, young people mostly. And there's, although nowadays I go and there's middle-aged people and gray-haired and so forth. But, you know, I look at them all, as I say, different shapes and sizes, and you wonder what the story is behind that person, you know. What are they, what's their house like, you know, what do they eat, and what are they like, what is their religion, and
I'm sure they'd be, if you would just announce yourself, I'm sure they'd be happy to take you home with them and show you all of those things. Let you roam through the garbage if you want.
Yeah.
Speaking of seeing kind of a multi-generational, I definitely noticed that on the last tour, especially the stadium run, that, you know, it was people a little older than me with their kids, and in some cases, people with their grandkids. One of our listeners, Chris Shear, just wrote this in. He says, last year, On the anniversary of Cliff's passing, he was able to visit the memorial stone that the Swedish fan club made several years ago. And he says he left a note written by the 8-year-old son of one of the local Met Club chapters in Denver. And the 8-year-old son left the letter, and it said, in honor of Cliff Burton. And he asked, what does it mean to you that there's now a third generation of Metallica fans that are turned on to Cliff and his contributions to the band, and something about Cliff you'd like to share with the youngest generation about him and his music? Because he's stretching now into, like grandkids of people who first saw him play.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that is the thing that really amazes me, is that these young kids, and I see them, there was, and I can't remember what venue it was, but we saw this little kid after the show was over with, and we were waiting for the cab to go to the hotel. And this man came by with this little kid, and he looked to be 9 or 10 years old. As it turned out, he was 10 years old, and he's from Florida. And I just absolutely amazed. We stopped and talked to the little kid and his dad, and just totally amazes me, these young people. That, well, like Rob Trujillo's son.
Yeah, Ty.
Mm-hmm.
Ty, just golly, but he's an old timer. He's 13, I think.
Wow.
So, but yeah, it does amaze me, and it's and I can see the enjoyment of the heavy metal music that people that have never that we take the family friends and family or friends that we take to a venue, and how they come away in having enjoyed it so much. And it's just it's a type of music that is enjoyable. It just is gets the old what do you call it, adrenaline going.
Oh yeah.
And so yeah, and as I say, I'm totally amazed at that it is still so doing so well, and it just appears to me that it is all indications are it could be going, because I certainly didn't. Jan and I both thought that it would pretty well peter out, but boy, they. Mm. And there's a lot of factors involved there, but they're still quite popular.
Yeah,
I think as long as the boys are making great records and selling out rooms, that Cliff's, the spirit of Cliff's always going to be around. You've mentioned a few times that it's not your music, humorously. One of our listeners, Jason Berry, asked, what is the kind of music that you like over the years?
Oh, I like an awful lot of it. I like classical music. I like opera. I like country western music. I like big band music, jazz.
We've got a couple more questions for you.
Okay.
This one's from our friend Stephanie, a fan of the show. These are pretty simple for you right here. This is, what do you currently do for fun?
What do you do for fun?
What do I do for fun?
Other than talk to miscreants like us on the phone who do podcasts.
No, that is fun to me. As you probably surmise that I don't mind talking about Cliff and my family, and the thing that really I like are people. And the people can be so loving and so enjoyable to me. And I like to read. I have quite a library. The sad part is that I'm a slow reader. And so.
Me too.
Although I'm a lot faster than I used to be. First thing of the day, each day, I pick up the paper. I take two papers and mainly read the LA Times. I go to the comic section. Got to read the comics first.
Got to get a good laugh first thing in the morning.
Yeah, and then the last thing at night, I watch it on like Stephen Colbert on CBS.
Oh yeah, he's great.
And his Comedy Central type of humor. He's absolutely wonderful, I think.
Oh yeah, I agree.
A couple of people just really wanted to just pass on a message to you.
Okay.
Danny Santana says he wants to thank you for coming back to shake his hand, as well as the hands of the other diehard fans hugging the rail last year at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena. He says, I'm too young to have ever seen Cliff in person, but whenever we see you at a show, we feel Cliff's spirit and presence, and I sure felt it that night. It may seem insignificant to a lot of people, but I'll never forget that moment.
Wow.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that very much. As I say, they are so enjoyable to me, just seeing them, and I greet them as as best I can, shaking the hands and touching them, that's fine with me, and vice versa.
Yeah, you've got quite the reputation with the fans. Yeah. That's nice. Another fan called Basic Gear Review said they want to thank you for taking the time to meet them at the NAMM 2017 show. Said you signed a poster for the Cliff Burton Morley Fuzzwah. And she says, such a great guy. He made every person feel important. I'll never forget it.
Well, I appreciate that, really. One of the things that I kind of feel bad about it, but it's pretty much, I had a heart attack in last July, and there were several venues that we were going to go to, but I had to cancel them. But everything has turned out okay, and I'm gaining weight back.
Good.
Well, glad to hear you're okay, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's, just good. Well, there's another thing about technology and the improvements that, my God, the way they treat patients nowadays is just, the medical thing is just mind-boggling. The things that they can do, just is wonderful, I think. And just so helps us live longer. And I feel fortunate in having the means to enjoy life.
Mm.
Now, when people like at Thanksgiving, I say thanks to the human beings, because human beings can be pretty damn nice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, agreed. Like yourself in taking the time to talk with us today.
Yeah, well, you know what, Ray?
My pleasure.
You're an all right guy, Ray.
You're pretty damn nice.
And I'm from Murfreesboro.
That's
right. That's a Tennessee Southern hospitality right there.
13 months of it.
Right. Oh, yeah. God. It's all... all been so much fun, and I appreciate it, talking to you guys, and I hope I haven't rambled on too.
Oh, Ray, no, this has been such a great pleasure.
We are very honored that you would take this much time into talking to the two of us and telling us stories and more about yourself and about your son, and it sounds like you and Jam were amazing parents to Cliff, and he was, like you said, the perfect son, that did nothing wrong and achieved what he set out to do.
Other than the milk, he did spill the milk. We covered that.
That's true.
He spilled the milk occasionally.
Okay.
Yeah, Ray, it's been such a pleasure. Like, we're so glad you're here with us and that you're well and that you can talk about Cliff and his legacy. And, you hold a really special place in the hearts and minds of a lot of Metallica fans. So it's truly a pleasure to get to talk to you today.
Well, I thank you very much for asking me. Any time if down the line you feel you want to chat, I'll be glad to chat with you.
How's tomorrow morning? 6 a.m. sharp.
Okay.
No, but I do appreciate that, and we'll let you get back to your day, and
okay,
we'll make sure we'll let you know or let Casey know when the episode comes out. We're going to put it out for our 100th episode, which is going to be in probably about a month and a half.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful. Hey, that sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we'll keep Casey informed, and we'll also send her the link to that guitar we were talking about.
Okie doke. That's great. Okay, you guys, Clint and Ethan, you have a good time.
All right. Thanks, Ray. You too. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, this is Ethan and Clint from Metal Up Your Podcast, and we want to talk to you about something we love called Patreon.
That's right. Patreon is a way for fans of the show to give back to the show, to donate money that helps us in quality and content. And not only that, but we've actually come up with all sorts of fun incentives to give back to you for supporting the show.
Exactly. For instance, if you donate $5 or more, you get access to Cover Our World Blackened, which is the official Metal Up Your Podcast Metallica cover EP.
That's right, and that's the only way to get it. In addition to the EP, we also give you priority email access, meaning we'll read your email first on the show. We give you early access to Patreon-exclusive merchandise, Patreon-exclusive giveaways, and any other side projects that Ethan and I might be involved in.
There's all sorts of things you can look at on there and you can donate to. Go check it out, patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast. How do you spell that, Clint?
patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast. And if you really think about it, $5 a month for an entire year, that's really just like a cup of coffee a month. So go check it out. Thanks, everyone. Peace.
Adios.
By the way, I randomly had a thought in the car the other day. I kind of did Mustaine voice to myself.
Yeah, oh boy.
And then I changed it a little bit and realized that Marge Simpson is kind of like female Mustaine voice.
Yeah, Homer.
Homer. Homer.
Oh, homie.
Hello, Homer. Meet the real Bart.
Hello, Mo. Meet the real flaming Mo.
Hello, Lisa. How's that saxophone treating you?
Oh, Bart, I'm going to have to put you in detention. Slacker. And this is a crossover with Back to the Future.
Yeah, that's right.
Simpsons.
Your father was a slacker, too.
It's make like a tree and leave. You sound like a butthead when you say it that way. All right, then leave.
Oh, geez.
If you were our advisor, what would you say? And then I would say, delete that.